from losing 7-1 to news of a takeover, and then a Joseph Mendes double, 2 goals for Graben, and 6 points from Villa and Rotherham, this week hasn't been a dull one for us Reading fans, and we are the three men who get the pleasure of talking about it right here on the Tylehurst End Podcast, episode number 126. But it's the number three that's the number to really watch out for this week, because we're just 3 points from the playoffs, there's 3 games to go, and we're in third place. And, of course, there's 3 of us. My name is Dan Wimbush. Now for that numerical opener. Thank you very much for joining us here on the show. And for those of you who've hit that download button, and before I introduce my 2 co-hosts, as always, a massive, massive thank you to everyone who has joined in our Patreon crowdfunding campaign. If you're liking what we do here on the show and with the YouTube show and the website and everything like that, and you think, you know what, these guys are doing a service, I want to help them get better and give them a little tip, as you would your hairdresser or a taxi man or anything, just head over to patreon.com/thetylehurstend. That's patreon.com/thetylehurstend. And show your support. And thank you very much to everyone who continues to do so. Right. After this bumper Easter weekend, I'm joined by Mr. Adam West. Westy, hello.
Hello, and hello, everybody.
And Mr. Mark Mayer. Mark, hello.
Hello, how's it going?
Not so bad, thank you. Gentlemen, do you care to divulge how many Easter eggs you consumed over the weekend?
I know there's 30 in my house at one stage. They weren't all mine, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, are there 30 now left in the house?
No, there's about 3 left. Again, 3 again.
Yeah, okay. Like it, Mark.
I'm on the back end of a cold, so I'm waiting until I can taste again, and then I think we'll get on the Easter eggs.
Excellent. Well, I'm trying to trim down a bit, so I've had to hide mine.
I find I can't have an Easter without a cup of tea, though. I really struggle to not have one without the other.
Yeah, but then you're like, oh, well, don't put any sugar in it.
No, I don't put sugar in it.
Sweet. Yeah, exactly. Right, I said it's been a busy week, a really busy week. Last time we recorded this show, it was a fairly desolate affair with me and Handbags talking about that 7-1 thrashing up at Norwich, not really knowing what to do next. But I think as strange as that result was, what happened at Villa Park and the goal scorers in particular were even stranger. So let's delve into that and that win over Rotherham. Let's get into the recap.
View from the Tylehurst End. Recapping this week's championship action.
Westy, I got all of the predictions in for the Tylehurst End Prediction League going into the Villa game, and every single one of us predicted a Reading defeat in various degrees. I think the best, in inverted commas, was a 2-1 defeat for Reading. So when the team lineup got announced and we saw that there was no Jan Kermigan, Paul McShane still injured, basically the same back line that had been thrashed up at Norwich, and then you find out that leading the line is Joseph Mendes, I can imagine that any one of us in the Prediction League probably would have been doubling down and scrambling to increase those predictions of doom. But the shock of all shocks, Reading go to Villa Park and pull off their first ever victory in the stadium, and Joseph Mendes scores 2.
It was a shock to us all, wasn't it? Let's face it. I know a few weeks ago, the manager was talking about the fact that he had a role to play at Reading, and I basically laughed and thought, I don't see him having any role to play at the moment.
Except for maybe T-Man.
Yeah, under 23 game, maybe. But, you know, there was no role for him to play as far as you could see it. And then to start him, everything he seems to do at the minute, Stam, turns to gold. And this one, I thought, yeah, we're going to struggle to get a result here. But in the end, it was relatively comfortable. But if you ever watch Mendes when we signed him, the YouTube clips of him scoring, I think he scored 11 goals, didn't he, at the back end of last season in France. All of his goals pretty much come from them positions, crossed into the box, one-touch finishes, either head or with his feet. So it was no surprise to see him score that sort of goal. And to be fair, he could have had a hat-trick in the end. He was unlucky not to score a hat-trick.
Absolutely. Mark, how important was getting that goal early doors for him, do you think?
Yeah, I think it is massively important, because when you look at the Reading games that he's played so far in, like, the Chequer trade, and I also thought in friendlies that I went and, like, Swindon, he did have those chances and he did miss them. And I think the fact that he missed them were pretty much the reason that he hasn't been playing yet. And I'm not entirely sure the exact reason why he was brought in for this game. But as we say, Stam pretty much made the call and dropped him in, and it paid off.
I think he's looked at the 2 games, hasn't he, and thought, I can rest players here.
Yeah.
But I didn't expect to see Mendes leading the line.
I thought it'd be the other way around. I thought you rest Kermigan for Rotherham and then play him at
Villa.
Actually,
no, I completely understood this. I thought Stan was very much thinking, this is a bit of a bonus game for us. We're going up against a really informed side. I think we talked about it. They'd won something like 5 in a row without conceding a goal at home. I feel like Codger in great form. I think Stan went along the lines of, if we lose this, we're kind of expected to, but we've got to beat Rotherham no matter what happens. So he kind of backloaded the lineup, I think, rather than front loading it, if that makes sense.
But it worked perfectly.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, really. I mean, if you watch the game, you watch the highlights of the game, Villa had more than one or two chances to level it at 2-2, and they probably should have done, and Reading sort of rode their luck at that stage of the game. But all in all, to score three goals away from home against Aston Villa, it's a great performance.
Yeah, Mendes could have even had a hat-trick as well. I mean, he scored a fantastic second, just, 20 seconds into the second half.
Yeah.
But he missed a great chance just before the break as well. So we could be sitting here talking about a hat-trick.
Yeah, and they all come from exactly the same position. That's why I said, if anyone sits there and watches his goals before he came, they all come in that sort of situation, crossing to the box, one-touch finishes. And maybe they've noticed that and thought, this is a way we can use him up front if we're going to play the ball in behind like we did.
Mendes took a lot of the headlines, Mark. But for me, Lewis Grabban's performance was possibly even more impressive. The way he played a role in those Mendes goals and then deservedly got himself on the score sheet at the end by taking the penalty almost out of Jan's hands. I think he had a bit of a discussion about who was going to take it. But I was delighted to see him step up and put it in the back of the net. And we'll go on to the Rotherham game a bit later. But how big was his role in that win at Villa Park?
Yeah, I think it's a big one because when you're looking at the types of goals, as we say, Mendes scores, he scores goals where he's facing the goal. And if he's going to have those chances, someone needs to create them. And Grabban has the pace and he does have the technique. He does have the kind of mentality and experience to create those chances. You'd say that Kermigan, if he was to play alongside him or was to feature, he wouldn't necessarily be in that because he drops deep and works the ball a bit more. But Grabban, it's a risk that we've been playing him as we have because we know that we haven't really got the best out of him yet. We don't feel we've been playing him in the right position, but the fact that he's suddenly turned good and still is playing on the wing, you would say. I don't think he's really been playing up front yet. The fact that that's come good is another positive for Stam.
Yeah, I think he's got a little bit of a dilemma. If I know Mendes missed out on the Rotherham game. He came off slightly earlier than I think he would have done at Villa with a little niggle. But I think the next time you go away from home, Westy, I think there is a strong case now to say that you probably should start Mendes and Grabban because they worked so well hitting Villa quickly that we just maybe haven't seen when Jan plays away so much.
No, maybe not. Like I say, if you're going to play more counter-attacking football, then they'd probably be ideal because, like you say, Kermigan does tend to get involved in the play and he probably hasn't got the legs that Mendes has got, although he's better as a footballer. But I think Villa were just... They probably didn't know nothing about Mendes and all of a sudden he's starting up front and they had no idea how to play against him. And we had no idea how he was going to play. No. So it was a massive turn up for everybody.
Well, I got to the stage where one of our followers, Adam House, was saying, no, he'll never score. If he scores this season, I'm going to get his name on the back of my shirt for the next 10 years.
I think...
So he's off to the megastore. He's going to pay up. He says he's going to pay up.
I think we all remember the last time we see Mendes was at home when he went through on goal and steps on the ball and fell over. I think he's one of those strikers. You don't want to give too much time to think. He just needs to play... And get the ball and play rather than having too many touches and time to think about things.
Yeah, a bit of a shame. I said he did pick up that niggle and couldn't continue that form against Rotherham. Not a lot of really things to critique otherwise on that Villa game before we move on, though. The goal was, I think, a little bit sloppy from Al Habsi. Thought he got caught in that corridor of indecision.
No man's land, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it was a shame because he made a great save before that.
I was just about to say, yeah, fantastic stop to prevent the goal in the first place and then to see that go in. But otherwise... A better away performance. Getting those goals, I think, helps. Whenever Reading go and take a lead, they look so, so much better.
Well, it plays into their hands, doesn't it? If you're going to play the football that they play, if you're leading, it's much easier to play it because teams have to come onto you as the direct result of you scoring. It's when, like Rotherham did this week, they score first and then sit everyone behind, then you've got more to think about.
Villa aren't a very good team at going behind as well. When they went behind against Fulham on a Saturday or whenever it was they're playing them.
Easter Monday,
that is it. And the Sky had a graphic come up saying that Villa have taken 6 points from losing positions all season. So it's the perfect team. In terms of the way we set up and the way that we obviously got an early goal.
Sounds like Reading under Nigel Adkins to me.
Yeah. But Villa have been, they've been poor all season. I think we were all expecting relatively big things from them and they've failed to deliver. Although they've been on a decent run, if you look at it as a season as a whole, they've got to be disappointed as a club.
Well, for that talent, yeah. The talent. When you've got someone like Jack Grealish and Scott Hogan coming off your bench, yeah,
you should be doing better.
Yeah, so, but still, as mentioned, the first time we've ever won at Villa Park. And that, it came under a little bit of pressure as well because the other results on Friday had really gone against us. Everyone had won, with I think the possible exception of maybe Huddersfield. I know even Huddersfield, I think, nicked it late, didn't they? They nicked a 3-2 win over Preston.
Leeds drew, didn't they?
That was it. Yeah, Leeds drew with Newcastle. But otherwise, it was wins for Sheffield Wednesday, wins for Fulham, And he was suddenly again staring at that scenario all of a sudden of, oh, we one more slip up and we could be out of this.
It's our goal difference that plays against us, doesn't it? Because when you're looking at it at 6 points, you still think, wow, they've only got to get level with us to go past us. And like you said, because everyone's results were positive, it did put a lot of pressure on to get something out. Even a point would have been all right. But as I said, they got
and the perfect tonic as well, because those nerves had crept in again amongst the fan base, and whether they'd crept into the squad, I don't know. Stam said they hadn't, but you know, after losing 7-1 at Norwich, Villa are a similar, I suppose, quality side on paper. The very fact that they've bounced back and straight away as well and gone and get a win sort of banishes those demons straight away.
It's all credit to them as well. To take a hammering like that, you could easily go into your shell and think, oh, maybe we're not as good as we think we are. But to go to Villa and go and do that and then win at home as well, they've put themselves in a great position now.
Yeah, well, that it really impacted the mood and the mentality going into the Rotherham game, because suddenly, you know, before the Villa game, you were thinking the Rotherham one was the key one of the weekend. Suddenly, it all felt a bit after the Lord Mayor's show. And unfortunately, while, you know, as fans, we can kind of get away with that a little bit, you can't get away with that as a Championship footballer. And that just seemed the mentality of the side. Now, Stan made changes. He brought back players like McCleary, like Kermigant, Roy Behrens, all coming into the side. And they just couldn't get going. They were almost just waiting, thinking, oh, well, this Rotherham side are the worst team in the league. They're going to give us a goal in a minute. And to Rotherham's credit, they didn't give Reading a goal.
Now, I had the whiff of a pre-season friendly that first half. It was very dour. Reading didn't come up with a lot of ideas, and Rotherham scored. And we didn't seem to have too many answers to it in the first half anyway.
Was it an effort thing for you?
I think it's I think it's an attitude thing. I think they come out assuming they was going to win. And after a positive result they had, I thought they was going to steamroll them and didn't maybe play at the percentages they should have been playing at. Because second half, when they brought the subs on, it was definitely a change of tempo. And once we upped the tempo, Rotherham really couldn't cope with us, I don't think.
Yeah, Roy Behrens was the man who particularly caught my eye, Mark. As I described it, he looked like he was sort of having a kick around in the back garden with his kids, just playing the odd Hollywood pass. Wasn't really sort of running in, making darting runs, causing confusion. Try and explain Roy Behrens to me, because I just don't get him.
I think the thing is with Behrens is that you come into a player who's not played in the Championship and he has to work out a kind of new system for each game he's going to play. So if he's going to play against Sheffield Wednesday, he knows the team a little bit more. He knows the sort of club that he's up against, and he can come up with a big goal, and that kind of changes the momentum of his season for a little bit. But then he comes up against Rotherham, and as we say, he's got a situation of thinking, oh, these guys are bottom of the league, they'll be probably relegated to League Two soon, I can come around and strut my stuff. And because Stan plays him quite regularly as well, he may not feel that pressure of, I have to keep my place in the team.
You're relegating Rotherham twice there as well.
He may think that. Because, you know, teams like Blackpool have gone down twice in a row. And I think there's a tendency for some players possibly to think that these teams are way below their level.
Yeah, if it was a bit of an off day for Behrens in that first half, Westy, did anyone stand out for you?
Williams. I thought Williams had a good game all the way through. Because what Williams will do when he's in the side, I say there's quite a lot about him, is he will try and drive the team forward. Because it was very, again, pedestrian, ploddy football. Backwards, backwards, sideways, sideways. Wasn't getting anywhere. And the only person that really tried to drive the team on was Williams. And I thought he was the best player for Reading on the pitch during the whole match. The other person disappointing me was Jakub Mate. I didn't see what he'd done in that first half. Every time we got it, he'd give it away. It looked like he was trying too hard, if anything.
He had one good effort on goal, and the follow-up, there was a bit of a bundle and a penalty appeal. I looked at the replay, I don't think it was a penalty.
No, I think the referee was right there.
Yeah. But
what position was Mate playing? Well, because I've heard like contrasting reports as to whether it was like a 5-4-1 or whether
he was often popping up in sort of forward right positions.
But he just seemed to give the ball away a lot, or just wasn't at the races at all.
Maybe. You can understand why Stam started Mendes ahead of him at Villa. Maybe that's just the way they've been in training.
Yeah, again, like I say, he sees him every day, we don't. But he didn't do himself any favours, let's put it that way.
I was pleasantly surprised, I shouldn't have been surprised, I guess, with Chris Gunter. I thought he had a very good game as well. Thought he tried and he was doing his best to sort of G the side on. I gave him some stick on this show a couple of weeks ago. Said he's not a great captain in my view, but to his credit, he did well, sort of was getting up and down that byline like we know he can, and tried to drive the side on as well. And Liam Kelly, I thought, did very well when he came on.
It was the subs that made a difference, I thought. When Kelly came on, it was a different level all of a sudden, because Williams was trying to play that sort of quarterback role, wasn't he? It's not really his position. He's more of a, like I say, more of a driving, thrusting type of player. And once Kelly came on and started playing quarterback, then we looked a lot better. It was a lot quicker, the movement was better, and then Grabham come on, obviously, and scored that great goal.
Cracking. cracking finish. One of our listeners asked us to can we spend a couple of minutes to appreciate that finish. That is the grabben I've been waiting to see. And I really hope now that these two goals in two games unleash him. And yeah. Stam is not afraid to mix and match. And maybe, as I said, I love Kermit. I think he's been brilliant. But all in all, as an attacking threat, I think Grabben is more dangerous. And I think Grabben will get you more goals than Kermit will.
Yeah, possibly he will. But like I say, a lot of the time, Kermit is useful as an all-round player rather than just a target.
Perhaps you'd start Kermit. I think on the bench point, it's also because we have players like Grabben now, and since January in particular, the bench is so much stronger now than it was in October when we were drawing games and we would bring on maybe Yaku Meite, who then was even more unknown than he was now, or an off-form Joseph Mendes. Now we have players like Lewis Grabben and Adrian Popper who have a bit of, you know, form behind them.
Yeah, and as I said, a much better second half performance. It still wasn't vintage. Mick Goodin on BBC Radio Berkshire gave Gareth McCleary his man of the match. What I thought it was poor.
I thought McCleary was better in the second half. I thought he did very little in the first. In the second half, again, it was the threat of him behind that made Rotherham get pulled about.
Has he lost a bit of zip, though?
Yeah, his form's not been as good, definitely.
I'm just talking raw pace-wise, because I can't remember him really sort of running at defences.
Not really opened his legs this week. He does tend to come in too much as well sometimes. I've said this about McCleary before. With the pace he's got, I don't know why he doesn't run the line a lot more. He does tend to cut inside a lot. But I thought the balls between him, Gunter, and him, those little balls in between, behind their defenders, and Swift got hold of a couple. I thought they interlinked quite well down that wing in the second half.
That second goal in particular, the ball, that little cutting ball from Williams out to Gunter, and then a great cross the box into the path of Swift to score the winner was fantastic. Yeah. You want to see more of that.
I think that goal is scored against, if you do that move, you score against Premier League teams. It's not just Rotherham that are outdone by that. You score against the likes of Chelsea and Stoke with those goals.
Yeah. Now, the other point to come out of this game was in Yapstan's post-match comments. He wasn't very happy because there were a few boos. I didn't think it was a massive chorus of boos. It was more of a frustrated groan more than anything at halftime. When you are losing 1-0 to the worst away side in Championship history, I don't think people are ever going to be happy. But Stan, you know, not completely digging out the fans, but he said they need to know they need to support that team and not boo them when they come off the pitch at half-time. From where the club was in the last two seasons to what it has done this year, fans should appreciate what the players are doing for them. You can say you're not happy when you're losing games because that's football. The fans need to stick to their team, help them out, and not only when you're in front, but also when you're behind. Especially when you play two games in 3 days, you need to have that extra man behind you pushing you forward. I don't think the fans are that bad.
No, there was a little bit of booing, but it was tiny amounts of people, and most people just walked off in silence rather than clapped them. But I think sometimes a team needs that, because we could quite clearly see that we should be doing better than we were. And we've already said it on the show that we was probably playing at 75%. And if you're a player and you've come off thinking that's acceptable, everyone cheers you off the pitch, then you're thinking, oh, I've done nothing here and I'm getting cheered off. I think sometimes they do need a kick up the backside, for want of better words.
Yeah, I don't think it's about us losing. I think it's about effort levels. If we're 1-0 down to Rotherham and we've hit the bar three times and had a storm in half, then no one's going to boo. But if we're 1-0 down and the fans feel like the players aren't, you know, justifying the money they're paid or even really taking it seriously, then they're going to boo. And I wouldn't say that was a bad thing to do at half time. If it was a really important game, like if it was a playoff semi-final, we're 1-0 down and not really showing it, then I wouldn't necessarily boo then.
No, yeah, I agree with you.
During a league game against the bottom side, the effort level is the key thing.
Yeah, it's clearly effort. That's all it's about. As a fan, you want to see your team giving you 100%, and I didn't think they did. Personally, I didn't boo them, but to be fair, there was very few people that booed. I think he's overemphasised it a little bit there.
Yeah, a little bit. Final point before we move on. What about the defence? Because that was another big talking point, as alluded to at the top of the recap, that conceding 7 goals at Norwich, there were a load of question marks floating around about how strong that defence would be. As we said, we didn't have anybody fresh back. It was the same sort of back line that we'd seen before, although Rhys Oxford did drop out against Rotherham. What did you make of it? Did you see that defensive stability return, or are they still sort of lacking that McShane, Vandenberg, Laurie figure?
Definitely, I think they're still lacking someone to shore them up better than they are. Like I said, if you look at the Villa game and the chances they had good chances that they should have scored from, and they put wide. So another day, you could have had a different result. Against Rotherham, they weren't a lot of threat to us, I didn't think. I mean, obviously they've scored, but again, it was down to our own stupidity, a lot of it. They're not as strong without McShane and Van der Berg in that squad, I don't think.
Who is your back? What is your back line going forward?
If everyone was fit, I couldn't tell you. I know that Blackett frightens me to death every time he gets on the ball. He's just attitude where he seems to saunter around thinking he's got all day long terrifies me. But again, he's not. I can't say he's had bad games. It's a good quandary to have because I think down the years we've probably had two centre-backs and they've played all season and there's been no other choices.
Can you afford to gamble at this stage of the season though? If Vandenberg is out again for another couple of games, can you gamble bringing him straight into the playoffs or do you have to stick with this lineup just because they've been playing?
I think, again, Vandenberg, it depends how fit he is, doesn't it, and where you're going to play him. I think a centre-back, he worries me unless he's in a free. And if he's playing holding midfield, you have to be fit to play that position because you are the shield for the defence. So if he's not fit, don't play him. Oxford, I think, you can't point at the fact that they had three lone players starting that Norwich game. If that was a problem, if it was, I don't know. But I think at 18 years old, in the position we're in now, I don't think you can be giving people games for the sake of giving them games.
Yeah, Mark, who would you put in that? Would you go three? First of all, would you go three centre-backs or just the two?
I think I'd probably keep it simple at the moment and go 4-3-3, which would mean, you know, McShane, Moore, Obita or Blackett. I don't really think I have a favourite out of those two at the moment. And then Gunter. And I'd have Vandenberg even if he is just back from injury, because even if you play him in the away leg and not at the home leg of the playoffs, he can make a big difference in the balance of the side. I think the bigger gamble is putting someone like Ilori or Oxford in there because they haven't played that much. They haven't seen the team, the system, the league, etc. And I think those are the bigger gambles for the playoffs when it is at the end of the day 30 seconds can end your season at that level.
Yeah, it's got to be really tempting for Stam to play Ilori. I mean, he spent a lot of money on him and potentially he's the most skillful of the defenders, maybe, I suppose, on a par with Liam Moore perhaps.
Yeah, definitely. I think definitely Lickshire going forward, he's going to be your starter every week, but like I say, he's hardly played all season. We're not sure about his fitness. I think if you play Blackett left back, he frightens me even more than he does when he's at centre back. So I would steer clear of that because I've seen him get roasted quite a few times this year playing left back because he just switches off.
Yeah.
And you can't afford to do it.
Well, the whole scenario of those 6 points over the Easter weekend has done wonders for our playoff situation. In fact, we're third in the league all of a sudden out of nowhere, above Huddersfield, who only got 4 points over the weekend. They do have that game in hand, though, so they can go back third. Reading now 6 points clear of seventh place, albeit with an inferior goal difference to Leeds. But the bottom line is that we're 3 points away. The magic number is three. So the teams below us need to either drop 3 points or Reading need to pick up 3 points, or a combination of the two, and we are home and hosed. Any remaining doubts from either of you two that we're going to make the top six?
No, not for the playoffs. I don't think all of the other teams are going to win, so we just need to draw, win, maybe one or two, and that'll be that. You know?
Equally, this weekend has very slightly, just slightly, creaked open that top two door. And it's it's impossible not to... I challenge any Reading fan out there that said they've not had a cheeky look at Newcastle's fixtures.
No, I certainly did.
Yeah,
it's not mathematically, but again, it's our goal difference that would probably cost us if they fell apart.
It's an extra
Newcastle
0.99 of a point, isn't it?
So we're 6 points behind Newcastle with both teams having three to play. So if Newcastle win one game, their goal difference is so much better that it's over.
I tell you what, though, if they was to lose the next game and Reading won it, then all of a sudden everyone would be looking at our table thinking two games left, 3 points behind. It would look a lot different then.
Yeah.
They can draw two, lose one.
Yeah.
Here's a nice, interesting question for you. What's more likely, Reading to finish top two or Reading to finish seventh at this stage?
I'd say top two.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to drop it. Like I say, with the fixtures everyone else has got, there's no way that all those teams are going to... Well, Sheffield Wednesday and Fulham and Huddersfield and teams like that are playing each other, so they can't win them all. So I think Reading would not need to win another game and they still end up in the playoffs.
Mark?
Yeah, I think Reading can lose all three and they'll still be in the playoffs. So if they win, they're probably likely to pick up 4 points, 6 points, you would say. And, you know, Newcastle are perfectly liable to lose at home against some dodgy teams because they've done it before this season.
And looking at Reading's games, you could quite easily see them winning in a one-off game. You could see them winning all of them, couldn't you? Although they probably won't, you could see them as playing them individual teams, they could win all them games.
Yeah, Forest away, who are, 21st. You've got Wigan, who are 23rd, and Burton, who are about, 18th, 17th, I think. Yeah. So
well, Wigan are pretty much down. Forest really need to beat Reading, and Burton may well be safe by then. So
yeah, I think Newcastle's remaining games are Preston Luton, Barnsley and Cardiff.
They host Barnsley on the last day of the season, yes. And Cardiff's away, so...
Certainly see Warnock upsetting them, but I'm not sure I can see Preston causing them too many problems, especially away from home. Anyway, that does wrap up the recap. So we're very nearly there, but stay tuned. And on that note of playoffs, it's just one bit of news to get to coming up in News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Okay, so the only news article I wanted to bring up in particular this week, we've heard nothing fresh on the takeover since the announcement that we discussed in last week's show. We're still just waiting. It's been given conditional approval, so they're doing all the relevant follow-up to that, and I'm sure the club will announce something when it's happened. I will, though, get your very brief opinions on it, gents, as I haven't had the chance to talk to either of you about it. Brought positive after the developments last week?
Yeah, I think it is. I think you can't not be positive about it. I think the ties have pretty much told us all we needed to know, that they can't afford to run the club anymore, or they want out, or whatever they're doing. They clearly have done the best they can do, and they're going to cut and run now. So we needed someone to take over. It's dragged out a long, long time, which was always going to be a worry for us. But if it gets owned up, it gets owned up. It's just another foreign investment taking over a club, really.
Is your what's your gut feeling, Mark? Is it positive, or are you fearful? Is your glass half empty or half full?
I'd say half full at the moment, because the positive side of it is the footballing side of it, in terms of the basic liquidity of the club and the potential investment, etc., in the football and the footballing side of things. My only worry exists at the moment around the land, around the stadium and the Royal Elm Park deal and the training ground, which seems to have just, you know, God knows what's going on with that at the moment. So those are my kind of worries. The peripheral bits at the moment need sorting out, but that's something which you're going to have to wait and see.
Yeah, my only theory that I've been thinking in the last week is I increasingly... Now, I hope these words don't come back to haunt me, but I can't see why the Chinese would get involved with the club unless they do just literally want to run a football club, because the ties have basically taken away any sort of lure of...
No, they've done well out of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing for the Chinese owners to come in and develop. It's not like, oh, they're going to buy land and stadium. Too late, it's already done. They can't really sell the stadium. I don't think anyone would allow that to happen. So, and there's no, it's not like we've even got parachute payments or something coming in. So they can't, like, do what Anton did and borrow against future money. They've got to put their own money in, or else what's the point?
And not only that, they loaned us £10 million yeah. So we can sort of push for the Premier League anyway. So that showed their intention. Like I say, like, they took the land now, which is, again, I think is a bit of a crime, but there we go. That's what happens. But I think that sometimes, like, just for these billionaire investors, they just want to have a football team just as a plaything, and hopefully they can push us on to the next level.
One of the key things I'll just say that Sassam said to BBC Berkshire when she did her interview last week was that the amount of people in Thailand that have gone up to her, like other businessmen, and said, oh, I know you because you own the football team, that just resonates with all people in that, especially that part of the world. It's always just a nice little thing to have. And when you've got billions of pounds, Reading, probably a bit of a drop in the ocean, really.
Yeah, and Bucks Raw did a little bit of research, didn't he, to find out that one of the people involved in this Chinese consortium had a really good impact when she came in to a lower league side in Belgium and really turned that side around. So it's just little anecdotal things that give you a little bit of extra hope. So fingers crossed, anyway, will remain to be seen how that all pans out. But as I mentioned, the one big thing I wanted to talk about was the dates of the playoffs. They've been announced. We've had lots of questions over the past few weeks about when they're going to be. Well, the EFL have confirmed the dates, albeit not exactly which bracket is going to be where. Obviously, third will play sixth and fourth will play fifth. They've announced the dates. The first pairing will play on Saturday the 13th of May at 5:30 for their first leg, with the return leg on Tuesday the 16th of May at 7:45, with the other pairing playing at 12 o'clock on Sunday the 14th of May, midday obviously, and then the return leg is on Wednesday the 17th at 7:45. Is there a preference for those?
No, I like Saturday games, but other than that, I don't think there's a preference.
My only concern is obviously if you're travelling up away from home and having to play a 12 o'clock kickoff on a Sunday.
Likely going to be in Yorkshire as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I slightly worry about that a bit.
So I'd let you go Saturday night, have the night up there, then watch football, then come home.
And Sunday night, you've got plenty of time to come home, haven't you? So it's not like you're going to be tired for work the next day.
No, I'm more talking about the team themselves rather than me. You know, they've got a long trip.
Oh, the team will be fine. You've seen their bus.
Yeah, they'll be all right.
Yeah, but I think a lot of teams sometimes say that they found it very hard to get themselves up for early Saturday kickoffs. I know a lot of Premier League players have said it.
I think the fans do.
Yeah.
I think there's always a muted atmosphere on the early kickoff games, wherever it is. Yeah, very dozy.
Yeah, anyway, it remains to be seen. As I said, they've not announced which one will be which, but those are the dates for your diary. Last year, just for reference, I think they were confirmed around the 3rd of May, so just before the very end of the season. So don't be totally shocked if they don't get announced till a bit later on. Anyway, as mentioned, that is it for News Bites, but you guys have done pretty well in the mailbag, considering we've won twice, yeah. So we'll get to that now.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
So as well as thanking everybody that supports us via Patreon, I've got to thank everybody who continues to chip into the mailbag. It's the interaction and the fact that you guys are listening and getting your questions in that, again, just gives that little bit of boost to think that, you know what, we'll keep on trucking with the show. So thank you to those of you who have sent an email to thetarlhurstend@gmail.com, whether you've tweeted us at thetarlhurstend or you're on the Facebook page at facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. And a bit of a shout out as well. We had a good little turnout yesterday when we did our post-game show from the Rotherham game live on YouTube. We had quite a few people chirping in the comments section and watching live. So that was really nice to get sort of feedback as we were talking. So hopefully we'll do a few more of those. And the more people that subscribe to YouTube, again, it gives us that little bit of extra boost. So do it. It's absolutely free at youtube.com/thetarlhurstend. Anyway, we'll start the mailbag with Lou Burton, who says, this may have been asked already, but who in this squad do you think would definitely make it in the big league if we go up?
You'd take Al Habsi, you'd take Gunter, you'd take Moore and McShane. You're talking squad players, effectively. It depends how Swift and the other young players like Kelly step up. You'd probably keep hold of Williams because you've got the money. And I wouldn't say any of the strikers or wingers I would necessarily take with us. Maybe McCleary.
I'll phrase this in a slightly different way. If you had to pick three players then to take with you into the Premier League that you could definitely protect and build around, who would they be?
Moore is nailed on, I think.
Swift as well.
Swift, yeah. Swift's got more improvement in him, that's for certain. And that leaves you one more. Because I think a lot of them are
that borderline sort of category, aren't they?
They're the players that are top championship players, but probably bottom.
Yeah, you're talking like nothing special in the Premier League.
Even McShane, to a certain extent. I mean, he's had plenty of opportunity in the Premier League, and he's a good player. But is he good enough to be able to keep top players out of scoring goals? No, he isn't. So,
on gut instinct alone, I would possibly say a Laurie.
Yeah, you'd have to say him. Just because
it'd be a Laurie or
billing.
Kelly.
Yeah, Kelly's got more in him, and I think actually Premier League football would suit him better than Championship football.
Yeah,
I think it'd be one of those three anyway. But so yeah, I think there's a lot of players that are very borderline, but we've seen it, you know, at both ends. We've seen Reading players that you thought, oh, they're never going to do well in the Premier League. People like Stephen Hunt didn't have a big part to play when we won the league with 106 points, but flourishes in the Premier League.
Yeah, that's right. And I think if you ask the Brighton fans the same thing, they probably only put three or four players that they thought were capable of coping in the Premier League, but some players will surprise you.
Absolutely. Moving on, RFC Fan Abroad says, if I was an opposition fan, I'd want Reading in the playoffs. Any team that has beaten us in them has always been promoted. I was thinking about this earlier. We are. If you want to go up, beat Reading.
Yeah, that's right. But again, it's yesterday's news and we can't harp on about it and go around with a negative attitude that we never win a playoff.
But do you think teams do look at Reading and say, I'll take Reading in the playoffs? Do you think we're that team that other teams want to play?
I think teams that have hammered us during the season, like Fulham, they might well do. Mm. But no, I think Reading are... They're a bit of an enigma, and I still, like I've said all season, I still don't think Reading have played to their peak. They just have spells where they're decent, and then they have a lot of spells where they're very poor. They haven't clicked into gear and just hoping that it comes this year rather than next.
I think if you're an opposition fan looking at Reading, you don't necessarily know what you're going to get, but you know that we can be dangerous and that we have beaten pretty much all... We've beaten all of the playoffs.
We're unbeaten against the top six. Top seven at home this year, I think.
Yeah, at home we've beaten them all, I think. And away, we've occasionally been trounced. So yeah, there's that unknown factor.
Yeah, it's... especially now you've got Mendes and Graben and stuff popping up.
Yeah,
with goals, right, as well. You've suddenly got a bit more reason to be fearful of Reading. So I don't think many teams will want us. And if they do, hopefully we'll... prove them wrong. Derek Walmsley, Stam seems like inventing formation / personnel on the training ground. Should he use what is tried and tested in games more?
He should use what wins. And to be fair, they haven't lost a great deal of matches throughout the season. Not in spells, anyway. I think he tries to play horses for courses. And I think sometimes, if your end broke, then don't try and
fix
it.
He's had a couple of moments where I thought, okay, what are you doing? I remember when he played Grabber in midfield, I thought, what's he doing?
There was no
Kelly at centre back against Rotherham. But generally, if he's tried something, it tends to work.
Yes, it's worked. Like we said about Mendes, I mean, he's come out of nowhere. There's not one person that Reading found alive that would have picked Mendes to start that match, and he's come in and scored two goals. So what do we know, really?
I would also say the times when we've been hammered aren't correlating to us trying something, you know, silly. We went to Norwich with a really standard lineup, probably the lineup that a lot of us would have picked, yeah. And yet we still got trounced 7-1, so that was not his...
And the great thing is, when they have got trounced, it's not like we've had a run of poor performances or games then. We've come back strong. Yeah. So
this team's ability to bounce back has been remarkable. They, every time you want to say, OK, the bubble's burst, we're going to slump, they just come back and they find a way to win. Or at least grind out a result. I don't think they've ever been more than sort of two games in a row before they picked it back up again. So, you know, credit to Stam and credit to the squad. Kyle asked a question we've had a few times now. Who do you think will be in the playoffs and who do you want? And home or away, first leg? I think we've all had our spells answered. Has anything changed in the past couple of weeks? I think last time we really discussed this, we said we didn't want Leeds.
My confidence in playing away first, I think, has grown with the Villa win, because after the Norwich win, I wanted us to play away second and just kind of,
yeah, so,
you know, have like a 1-0 lead at home or something like that, and then take that and defend it with all your worth. I think that's probably the only thing that's changed. Leeds, Huddersfield, Chef Wednesday, Fulham, all good enough to beat us, all bad enough to be beaten. That hasn't changed.
Who do you think is going to be the team to miss out then, Westy?
Again, looking at the fixtures, I know Fulham have come on a good run, but if you look at the three games they got, I think they've got the hardest games out of everybody. And they've had a lot of hard games. You know, they've had a terrible run into the end of the season. They've done really well. And they've played a lot of teams at the top. But if you look at Fulham's fixtures, remaining fixtures, as Huddersfield and Sheffield Wednesday away, that's not easy with teams that are going to need points as well.
Yeah, I still think I want to avoid Fulham and I want to avoid Leeds. I take Huddersfield at the moment because I just don't rate Huddersfield.
I think Fulham will drop out. I think they won't get enough points to stay in the playoffs.
Okay. Mark, who do you think is going to be a team to miss?
Yeah, Fulham are the ones you pick out of the list on fixtures. I still would say Sheffield Wednesday are the dodgiest, though.
Okay. Thanks for the question, Clyde. Robert Stevens with three at the back. As at Villa, we look defensively solid, compact in midfield and effective up front. Why doesn't Yap stick with this?
I suppose he thought, why do I need to play three at the back against Rotherham? Mm. Get the full backs pushing on, and that's basically what they've done.
Yeah, I don't think there's any, as you were saying, he plays horses for courses. If he looks at a team and thinks that they're going to be not necessarily pushing on so much, they're going to be playing on the counter and they're not that much of a threat anyway, then you may as well just play two at the back in effect and have everyone else dedicated to attacking.
I think you'll find when the playoffs come away from home, they'll play five defenders, yeah, basically.
I think so. Tim Redmayne, who is the most important injured player we must get back fit for the playoffs?
McShane, I think, just because he's a leader.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Adam Osmond, in light of Theresa May calling a general election, what Reading player, current or former, would make the best MP? Jimmy Kebbe, because he'd just do what he wants.
Yeah, I used to have a little joke about Kebbeism being a religious thing back in the day when he was pulling the strings. I'd say maybe Phil Parkinson, very diplomatic type
but
of
tough,
hard-working.
Yeah, be Labour though, wouldn't he? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Old-school Labour, I think he'd be.
Basically, turning it on his head, anyone but Danny Guthrie.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd go missing.
Yeah. And Blackett as well. I wouldn't stick with his policies, you know what I mean? I think it could be a bit laissez-faire or a bit casual.
Oh, poor Tyler. He'll be Prime Minister one day. Alex Everson, which pub do you want at Wembley? The Torch or the Green Man? Getting ahead of yourself there, Alex. I liked the Green Man. Going there for the Swansea game. Don't think I've been to the Torch.
Like I said off air before we started this, the last time I went to Wembley, I went to Lidl. It's very good. 6 cans for a fiver. It's well worth it.
And if you want to sponsor us, Lidl, the tarlestend at gmail.com.
I have 30,000 fans queuing through a Lidl. It takes a while to queue a Lidl anyway. Having all those fans might be a bit of a struggle.
Yeah, my preference, I thought the atmosphere at the Green Man for the Swansea game was fantastic. And I might have mentioned this once or twice on this show, but 2 years ago today, I didn't get to go to Wembley for other reasons. But thankfully, I was drinking anyway. That's
we,
all right.
We were in the other, in that opposite end of the ground to the Swansea game. And if you're thinking like on TV, it's to the right of the TV cameras for the Arsenal game, or on the left of the Swansea game. I think I'd rather be on the same end we were for Arsenal, whichever, east, west, whatever that is.
This week I've got to play that Journey track this time. We've got our own sort of on there.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll try and ignore that. Zoran Novakovic says, the Boo Boys should be ashamed of themselves. Stan quite right to hit out with them. Get behind the team for the playoffs. we've sort of hit this already, yeah. Westy, and I don't massively agree with people that boo, but I will always defend their right to do it. But what I did think was nice is there was quite a good crowd.
Yeah, it was
a
good turnout.
You could see those sort of filling up a bit, in, especially in the Eamon Dolan stand.
Yeah, I was quite surprised, but I suppose being a bank holiday, there was more opportunity for people to get down there, and it's probably bored of the family by the time the weekend had come. And by Monday it comes,
walk
sorry.
Off the Easter eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was good to see it, but again, we discussed it. I think if you're booing during the match, I've never liked that. But if you want to boo at half-time because you're unhappy with people's performances, then I don't see there's much wrong with it, to be honest.
Mark Luke Jarrett asks, are Newcastle choking? Can we catch them? And more importantly, who would you rather have, Newcastle or Huddersfield, in the playoffs? And that's a bit of a new spin on the question.
I think the only teams that historically don't do well in the playoffs are the teams that have just missed out on promotion, like we did against Burnley a few years back. And you see, like Brighton last year as well, if you have that disappointment of missing out on automatic promotion, you don't do well in the playoffs. So in that sense, I would take Newcastle in the playoffs.
Oh, no, I'm not taking it. They've just got so much quality to hurt you.
Yep.
I think they would wake up. When West Ham were in the playoffs and they lost to Crystal Palace, I think, under Pardew, and then a few years later they won against Blackpool in the final.
Yes, after we pipped them.
Yeah, you don't want to be going to St James's Park up there and trying to play them in the playoff game. No, thank you very much.
No. Can we catch them? Of course.
We can, yeah.
Whether we will, I can't see a scenario. As I said, if the goal difference was different, could I see Newcastle losing two games? Sure. Can I see them not winning one of three games?
No.
Unfortunately not. Nick Beckett is asking one thing about the takeover. He says, one thing not mentioned since the takeover has resurfaced is if Chris Samuelson is involved. That would be bad.
He was floating around the other week,
but
wasn't he?
He was. I think at the Barnsley game he was photographed appearing at.
Hmm.
I don't think it's a coincidence. I don't think he's getting invited there for a fun return.
For tea and biscuits. I don't know if him being involved would be bad as such, because don't know his involvement in it. I don't think he is, because I mean that Barnsley appearance was so out the blue that it just didn't correlate with anything that's happened.
But
well,
he had a
since.
Link to the Chinese investment group that took over Aston Villa with Tony Jia. So you wonder whether maybe he does have a part to play in.
He'd probably go between or sort of spokesperson or something. Yeah, it just turns out where the money is. I suppose maybe if he's got links with China, maybe he's just a go between at the moment, sort of doing. Helping them along with their business while they're out of the country.
As long as he has no power whatsoever to decide the future fate of the club, because, again, just purely based on speculation, it doesn't sound like he was making our sale particularly easy last time round when Anton did a runner. So, but anyway, I don't know these things. And as I said, if he's led us to a fantastic owner that's going to take us up to the next level, then I guess I'll forgive and forget. Anyway, that'll do it for the mailbag. Again, so thankful to everyone who continues to help and support the show and get involved via all of the addresses I've repeated so many times over the past 126 episodes. In the meantime, we've got another championship game to preview. It's Any Other Business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any Other Business.
Nottingham Forest, gents, one of those real Jekyll and Hyde championship sides that just seem to bounce around mid-table most seasons. But this year, it's not going very well for them. They are in 21st position, just 1 point clear of the relegation zone. Mark Warburton came in a few games ago, but he's not been able to really turn it around. I thought they were going to drag themselves clear when they beat Huddersfield a couple of weeks ago, but they just can't seem to escape. And Matt Mills could be relegated, Mark.
Yeah, and he may be putting another transfer request to a different team that isn't us in that case. This is the perfect time to play Nottingham Forest. I can't think of a better team to go to at the moment than a team that's won 1 in 10, is that?
Yeah.
And they had a bad result at the weekend. I can't remember again who they're playing. But they are just so nervous as a club and so vulnerable.
They got beat at home by Blackburn.
Yeah, exactly. So perfect time to play them. I don't necessarily think we're going to win. But I do think if you get an early goal, then you can really take a nice, comfortable win.
Is this the time now, Westy, where Yap might be encouraged to trial another game of grabbing up front or trial another game of Mendes? Or is he now, is the big thing for Reading, obviously securing the playoff spot first and foremost, but is it, I want to play the team I'm going to be playing in that first leg of the playoffs?
I don't, especially away from, we spoke about it earlier, but away from home, would it hurt resting Kermigan here and now? I don't think it would. I think it all depends on what is what he wants to do. I think maybe you want to get this game out of the way, put your strongest side out of what he believes is his strongest team and get it won or get some points and make sure we're definitely there. I think the games from experimenting are the next two, where Wigan will be relegated and Burton, like I said, will probably be safe or they'll be needing to win. I think then you might see it trialled. And if it works, then it's going to give him a problem for the playoffs.
I suppose the only problem with that is that if you're trialling it against the worst teams in the division, you're not really sure how it's going to then translate when you're playing a team in a high-press situation. Surely, if you want to see how players cope under pressure, you play them against a team that's fighting for their lives.
Yeah, I guess, I don't disagree with you, but like I know it's unlikely, but while there's still opportunity to finish second, surely you've got to go for it with what you think is your best side. You'd have thought.
Yeah, it's difficult to see quite why Forest are where they are, because you look up and down that lineup and they've got some good players in the likes of, you know, Zach Clough and Asson Belonga was a...
They've spent a lot of money as well.
Was it a £7-8 million player? I know he's had some horrendous injuries. Vaughan's experience, Osborne's always been good at this level. Michael Mansion, the lone ranger that he is, still knocking around the league, I see. And I said Matt Mills is knocking around the club somewhere as well.
We owe these guys a relegation as well, don't we?
Yeah, 98.
They relegated us. Yeah. They relegated us.
So. Was it Van Hooydonk scored late on?
Yep.
Yeah.
So we owe them a relegation. I wouldn't be too disappointed to see Forest get relegated. Or Birmingham. In fact, I'd rather Birmingham got relegated.
Yeah. Harry Redknapp's back.
He's got a hard start as well, and he's got Villa first game. They're not going to let it off the pedal.
This is an absolute no lose for Harry, isn't it? Because if he goes in there and they get relegated, it's all Zola's fault. And if he goes in and keeps them up, it's like, I'm brilliant.
Yep.
So,
but it's a great game to have first, isn't it, Villa? Because although Villa's season's over, they're not going to want to do them any favours, are they? Yeah. So,
no Birmingham derby, no.
They'd love to send them down.
The bookmakers, they're not massively behind Reading to the point where we're actually not favourites for this game, despite being third in the league. We are just better than just under 2-1. The bookies have Forest at 11-10 and the draw is at 12-5. I don't know where I'd put my money, really.
I tell you what, they're trying to draw you into a Reading bet, though, aren't they?
Yeah, that's definitely tempting. I don't think we draw many games. I don't think I bet.
No, you don't.
I can't think of the last time we drew a game.
I think their belief is that Forest are desperate to win this game and probably will, whereas Reading are more secure. But Reading are not secure, as far as I'm concerned. So I think Reading's good value, but yeah, you don't want it. I'm bottom of the prediction league, so I wouldn't be taking any advice from it.
And on that very note, you did get the result right against Rotherham. Predicting everyone, unsurprisingly, picked a Reading win, but nobody got 2-1 as the correct scoreline. That meant 1 point all round. That means that Handbags and Johnny are top on 33 points. Charles is second on 31. I'm then a point behind on 30. And Westie are on 25. So to win the league now, you have to get the next three scores completely spot on.
Wow.
So there's
all the playoffs,
no pressure.
You've thrown in the playoffs as well.
No.
Maybe the playoffs can be a tiebreaker.
They can be a tiebreaker. But yeah, so there's a lot of pressure on this bet.
Okay. Do you know what? Every time I've done Reading to win, they've got beat. So I'm going to stick with my anti-forecast, and I'm going to say that Forest are going to beat us 2-1.
Okay. I'm going to say that it will be a 2-2 draw. Is my thing. Interestingly, the points tallies this year are already, I think everyone in the prediction league is better than they were at this time last season.
Well, so we've all improved.
No, we've all improved.
It's because Reading were awful last season, and the optimism of picking a win has just, yes. It's actually paying off now.
Absolutely. So yeah, I'll go for a 2-2 draw. Mark, honorary prediction?
If I was in the league, I'd say 1-0 to Reading.
Okay, cool. Right, that just about wraps up this show. We are going to turn off the mics shortly, turn on the camera and record a pub chat extra where we're going to talk about when football and life collide and some of the stories we've had supporting Reading over the years when we've had to decide between the two and when one's got in the way of the other. So stay tuned for that. That will be up on our YouTube channel in the next couple of days or so. Hopefully, as mentioned, you've been enjoying the post-game shows as well on there. So give us as much feedback as you can about what you like, what you don't like. And if you've got any ideas for video features as well, we're keen to take them on. You may have seen Mark popping up a few times, covering a couple of topics. Hopefully get another video out in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, hopefully. I'd like to do a little series, I think, with the website as well, maybe looking at past playoff runs for the Reading and seeing how they went.
Really want to depress people.
I think we know they will.
But yeah, keep an eye out there. And obviously on thetarlesden.com, lots of great opinion and reaction. Go read the player ratings from the Rotherham game and lots of other bits and pieces as well. But gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
And we will be back with this show again, probably next Tuesday or Wednesday. We'll keep you updated via Twitter. But in the meantime, here's to hoping for 3 points and that playoff place confirmed after we play Forest on Saturday. Come on, you Arse.
Tarlhurst End podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.